So the Parsha, and really the whole Sefer, is somewhat of a recollection of things that have happened in the Midbar. Right? So basically you're going to say that Devarim is, according to many, a repetition, quote-unquote, of what happens between Shmos and Bamidbar. Right? Those three books. But obviously there are nuances and there are differences. And one of the most intriguing activities or exercises to do when you come to Sefer Devarim is to compare and contrast when it actually happened in the first time in Shmos in Vayikra or Bamidbar and how it's recalled in Devarim. And the truth is that even in this week's parsha, there are many things that are sort of enlightened that we didn't know before, right? The fact that Moshe had a more active involvement with sending out the spies than we originally thought. That Hashem also, there are different nuances that you pick up when you recall something that you don't realize happened the first time around. Today, however, we're not going to focus much on those nuances. We're really going to focus on something which is relevant for this weekend, and that is Eicha. Now, what's interesting is that the word Eicha is used in three instances, because the word Eicha in the book of Eicha is actually said a few times. But the word Eicha comes up two other places, both of which we're going to read this weekend. First on Shabbos morning in the Parsha of Devarim, and then secondly in the Haftorah, which is about which is from Yeshayahu, which uses the word also. And when the rabbis look at this, as you would imagine the rabbis would, the way that Chazal operate, they take these three and they say there's got to be some connection between them. There's got to be some common denominator. There has to be some kind of compare and contrast between them that's leading us to understanding them better. Right? Because when Hashem makes a Torah, when He makes a Tanakh, when we go in through the Psukim, we try to analyze what things mean. So one of the best ways we can analyze them is by recognizing other places where the same thing is mentioned. Sometimes that means the same concept. Sometimes that means the same word. And in this case, it means the same word. If you have a word that only comes up a few times, so then you have to ask yourself, why specifically these times? One of the best, one of the best commentaries that does this very often, although I didn't look at his commentary for this, is the Baal HaTurim. People don't know what the Baal HaTurim was? Baal HaTurim was the person who wrote the Torah, also known as the Torah. His name was Yaakov, and welcome. He was the son of someone named Asher ben Yechiel, or Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel, known as the Rush. So the Torah is the son of the Rush. And oftentimes when you think of the Rush, you think of you think of Talmudic commentary, you think of halachic decisions and things like that. And that's what the Torah really uses in his parish. When he writes the Torah, much of the Torah is in a conclusion of halachic discussions in the Talmud. When he writes his parish on Chumash, however, welcome Judy. When he writes his parish on Chumash, it's much more about these types of things. Recognizing the repetition of different words and seeing what are the other places that the word comes up and why is that relevant to this place. So I didn't look at his commentary here, but the Midrash itself already talks about it. Whereas he does it in every Pasuk and all the Torah, the Midrash itself picks up on this repetition of the word Eicha. But let's start off with the Parsha for a second. The Parsha starts on page 938. A lot of interesting stuff in the Parsha, obviously, because it's the recollection of all the other interesting stuff that's gone on that we've already talked about. But just a couple interesting things to point out as we go on. Eile ha-dvarim asher diber Moshe al kol Yisrael. So what does this mean? The introduction to the Sefer is basically telling us this whole book, 938. This whole book is going to be what Moshe said to the Jewish people. Right, as opposed to the first four books, which was basically the omniscient Hashem telling us what happened, the narrator of the Torah being Hashem. Here, we have a recollection of what Moshe says. Right, as we have already said a few times, Moshe is at the border of Eretz Yisrael. He's not going to go in, but before he allows the Jewish people to go in, he's got to give them a pep talk. Right, and the pep talk is pretty big. It's the entire book of Devarim. Right? It's...
Not so much pep talk.
A lot of muster. Yeah. A lot of muster trying to keep them in line, keep them abiding by the Torah that he taught them. So this is what the Parsha tells. This is what the Sefer starts off with. These are the books. These are the sayings of Moshe to the Jewish people in the Eiver Hayaridim Amibar Bavar Mol Suf Ben Parim Ben Tovel Levan Vachas Josvi Tzahav. Just giving the coordinates of where the Jewish people are. There are 11 days from Chorev, and then it goes through. It was 40 years in the desert. Over the page 940, they did everything like Hashem said. After they killed Sichon, and after they killed Og, and then it says in the fifth pasuk in pasuk Hay, Be'ever Hayarden Beretz Moav, in this place in the Transjordan in the land of Moav, Ho'il Moshe Be'er Es HaTorah Hazos Lemor. The word Ho'il is an interesting word. Ho'il usually means like since or because. Here, how does it translate it here? On the other side, Moshe began explaining. Ho'il, I don't know if we have this, I'm sure we have it in another context also, but it means to start. And it starts to elucidate, right? Be'er is like some kind of explanation. He tries to explain the Torah. What does that mean, to explain the Torah? So according to many commentaries, Devarim is a, as you said, a recollection, but it's a type of paraphrasing of much of the things he's already explained to make it more understandable. And I wrote about this a little bit in the monthly newsletter for those who read that. So I spoke about it a little bit. The Tziv has an interesting idea about what Devarim is all about. But then he says, as you can see, Hashem akinu diber elinu b'choriv lemor. Hashem spoke to us at Har Sinai, choriv. Rav lachem sheves b'har hazeh. Stop, you know, what are you doing here at Har Sinai? Pnu su'lachem b'vohara u'vohara meri v'al shechenav. And then he goes, he says, go to other places in the Midbar. So that's already an interesting phrase. That Hashem said to us, Rav lachem sheves b'har hazeh. What are you still doing here at Har Sinai? You've been here long enough. Really, that's what Hashem said. Hashem said that. Because if you look at the Gemara in Shabbos tells us that one of the negative things that happens to the Jewish people is that they left Har Sinai. As Tosfos says over there, like a child running away from school. And yet when it comes to Sefer Devarim, it sounds like Hashem is the one that told them to leave. So, not clear, but this is one of those things that you have to look into. Maybe for another year we can look into that. It's interesting, in Kansas, so they had this trend. They had trivia nights. I heard you have trivia nights here too. But in Kansas, the last couple of years, it's been like the thing everybody does. The JCC had one, this hospital had one, and the shul had one. So for the shul, actually, no, it wasn't in the shul. It was at this hospital fundraiser that my friends ran. They had this trivia night, and I think it was on Hanukkah. Oh no, that was the shul one that was on Hanukkah. But there was a category for the Bible. So everyone obviously started to look at me, and I said, it's not going to be our type of Bible, whatever. And one of the questions was, where was the Torah given, or something like that. And the moderator, who was not very religious, gave the answer of Chorev. And obviously Chorev in our tradition is the same as Har Sinai. So everybody puts up Mount Sinai, and he has Chorev, and everybody in the entire room, like a few hundred people, are looking at me and saying, is it the same thing? Is it not the same thing? And I'm like, I don't want to get in the middle of this. But yeah, so in our tradition, Chorev is Har Sinai. So Hashem says, you should be, what are you still doing in Har Sinai? You should go and conquer these nations, etc.
They only move when Hashem told them to.
Yeah, yeah. So much of the explanation between this or when Tosfos says that, when Tosfos says that they left Har Sinai like a child leaving school, he doesn't mean that they were supposed to stay at Har Sinai forever. He means the way that they left, right? The way you leave something is expressive of how you feel about it, right? So when we leave shul, there's a halacha, you're supposed to walk out, you know, with humility. Some people walk out and they bow as they walk out the door, right? So there's a way that you leave something which is respectful, and then there's a way that you leave something which is disrespectful. The way that the Jewish people left when Hashem told them to leave was disrespectful. That's basically how you understand, how do you make amends between these two sources, between the Gemara and Shabbos and this pasuk here, which says Hashem told them to, but for a different time. And then we continue. Borishu is haaretz shenishpash and lavzechem of Abraham Yitzchak Yaakov says lahem in pasuk ches and then pasuk tes va'amar lechem va'isahil emor lo'uchal levadisa eseschem. This is very interesting. Another nuance which is different from the way we understood it the first time around. And I said to you, this is Moshe Rabbeinu talking in pasuk tes in verse number 9. I said to you at that time, lo'uchal levadisa eseschem. What does that mean? I cannot carry you alone. What's that referring to? So first of all, it's machlokas in the Midrash. Is this referring to when the Jewish people were complaining and Moshe's like, I can't do this anymore? Mm-hmm. Or is it talking about the situation with Yisro? What happened with Yisro? He set up judges. Who instigated that episode? It was Yisro, right? When we learned it back in Parshas Yisro, Yisro came along and said, Moshe, this is not good what you're doing. You're going to get worn out. The people are going to get worn out. They're standing here all day waiting for you. So that Yisro says, let's make a whole judicial system. Here it doesn't say that. According to the one commentary, that one opinion in the Midrash, that this is Moshe Rabbeinu talking about the situation with Yisro, it's Moshe who said such a thing. I said to you, I can't carry this by myself. Okay, now we have another nuance that some people have to deal with. Hashem made you many a great nation, etc. Hashem will increase your numbers 1,000 times. That sounds like a very nice bracha. But Rashi says that there was a conversation here that Moshe was reprimanded for this. Rashi says, what does this mean? Hashem should bless you like Hashem already did. What does it say here? Okay, it doesn't say it here exactly. Let me see. Does the art scroll have this note? What number is it? No, it doesn't have it. But some commentaries point out, what is Moshe Rabbeinu doing? He's saying, you're going to get 1,000-fold. Hashem already gave you a lot. Hashem already said you're going to be many. And Hashem didn't put a number on it, right? You know, when kids start like arguing, they say, well, I did it this much. And the person goes, I did it this much. Well, I did it infinity. Right?
I did it infinity.
And then, so what does Hashem says? Hashem says, Hashem made you like the stars in the heaven. And then what was Moshe? What are the stars in heaven? It's infinity, right? There's an infinite number of stars in the heaven. And then what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Hashem alkechem yosef alechem kachem elav pamim. He should make you not just the stars in heaven, but 1,000 times the stars in heaven. So the commentator, what does that do? What it like, doesn't change anything. But anyway, so that's another thing that some people point out. But here's the operative phrase we're going to be talking about this week. And when the Torah laner reads it in shul, oftentimes they'll read it with the same tune that we read Echa with. Right? And they'll sing the pasuk. Echa salavadi tarchachem masachem v'rivchem. And Moshe says to them, how am I supposed to carry you by myself? Tarchachem, masachem, rivchem. What do these things mean? What is it? Tarchachem means like a tircha de tibor. Right? Your inconveniences. Right? Masachem. What is a masa? Something you have to lift up. Linsoa. Or linsoa is a bad word. I don't know what it would be. Linsa, probably. How do you lift up? And then rivchem. What's a riv? It's a fight. So all these difficult things the Jewish people are giving me. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, how can I do it by myself? That's what he says. And we read it in that tune as if to conjure up the connection already ourselves between this pasuk and Echa. It would seem to be that there's some kind of struggle which connotes the two, which connects the two together. Now we said that there's a third instance of Echa. But what you see from, we'll get to that in a second, what you see from the continuation of these psukim is that this is definitely talking about Yisro. Right? The first time it's unclear. It's talking about when the Jewish people complain, or is it talking about Yisro? Here, the next pasuk tells us, Havu lachem anashim chachamim unvonim viduim l'sheftechem v'asimim b'rashechem. Bring people that are wise, understanding, knowledgeable to your tribes, and I'll put them at the head of the courts in your districts. Vatanu osi, who's Vatanu osi? And you answered me. We don't get this dialogue the first time around, I don't think, if I remember correctly. Vatanosi, the Jewish people answered Moshe, Vatomru, Tova Devar Shehidibarta Lasos. That's good what you said to do. They never got the opinion of the Jewish people the first time around, at least when we were told the first time around. All these people, all these leaders, all these judges, all these officers, they're all going to judge between you. And then it says the following phrase. If you look at verse number 17, Yud Zayin, all these people should judge all the cases. Lo tagiru mipnei ish, they shouldn't be intimidated. Ki amishpat l'elokim hu, because justice is given over to God and to nobody else. V'adavar she yikshem ekem, and whatever is too difficult for you, takrivun elai ushmativ. You should bring it to me and I'll decide. Right? Moshe is basically saying, I'm the Supreme Court. They'll do all the little stuff. If it's too difficult, then you bring it to me. What's interesting about this, already noted back in Yisro, when Yisro proposes the judicial system, what does he say? He say, they'll do the small stuff. That all the big stuff they should bring to you. And here on Moshe Rabbeinu repeats it, what does he say? He doesn't say the big stuff. He actually goes out of his way to say, kakaton kakadol tishmaun. They'll do the small stuff and the big stuff. What stuff am I going to do? Kol hadavar yikshemikem. Whatever is difficult. Doesn't matter if it's a big court case and there's a big celebrity, or it doesn't matter if there's a big macher and he's got a lot of money. I don't care for big or small. I care for difficult. Tell me what the quality of the case is. If you can't figure out because it's difficulty, you bring it to me. I don't care if it's a poor person. I don't care if it's someone no one's ever heard of. If it's difficult, that's what I'm for. I'm not here for the big stuff. I'm here for the difficult stuff. So that's just a shift in perspective between Moshe and Yisro that maybe we'll get to a different time. But so this scene, which is really introduced by the word Echa, so that scene is clearly in this circumstance talking about the institution of officers and judges. So what are we supposed to do with this? If you look first of all at the Ramban has an interesting commentary in source number 2. The Ramban tries to explain to us what these three things are, right? We said there are three things in the first pasuk and the first source here. Echa salavadi, how can I lift it, carry it myself? Tarchachem, ma'asachem, verivchem. So what is a tircha? We said a tircha is an inconvenience. What's the inconvenience? Says the Ramban in source number 2. Vatam tarchachem, ma'asachem, verivchem. Aderech hapshat, rimez, ramaz, Moshe Rabbeinu lahem, shloshes hadivarim sh'amar liyisrael, shayhu osel la'am. K'mosh b'rashti sham. It's a simple way to understand it. It's like Yisro said, go back there to figure it out. However, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he says it this way, with these words, he means something else. Amar tarchachem keneged v'hodati etchukei ha'alokim v'yes torasav, that I will give over to you the statues of Hashem and the laws. Ki toreach gadol haya lelamed liyotzei mitzrayim ha'chukim v'atoros. Uperusham uberuram v'sodam. That it's difficult, it was difficult, very inconvenient, very labor-intensive, tircha, for Moshe to teach a people, specifically the words in the Ramban, to teach a people that came out of Egypt. They didn't have any of these laws. To teach those people all these different laws and how to explain them and their foundations, that was very difficult, that was a burden. That was the tircha for Moshe Rabbeinu to do. That's tarchachem. What's masa'achem? Masa'achem keneged litrosh elokim. Shehu inyan tfila shemispala alayim. What was a masa? What was carrying their burden? That was when Moshe Rabbeinu had to daven for the Jewish people. All those times the Jewish people messed up and Moshe Rabbeinu had to come to Hashem and say, no, forgive them this time. Forgive them again. Forgive them again. That was difficult. That was him carrying their burden. What is the word rivchem? Kipshuto inyanei hamishpatim. You guys have some kind of argument with each other. I came and I had to fix it. So these are the three things. It would seem, therefore, that within this difficulty, within this burden that Moshe Rabbeinu feels he has to carry, are actually not such terrible things. Right? It wasn't as we sort of explained earlier, that he had to deal with all of their difficulty and all their complaining and all their stuff. What does it have to do with? It has to do with Moshe Rabbeinu's ability to give over all the information, right? The first one was teaching Torah. I have to teach the people that come out of Egypt all the laws and all the statutes, right? That's difficult, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a difficult thing for him to do, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. Then we have Masa Achem. Moshe Rabbeinu had to daven for them. It's true, they had made mistakes, but Moshe Rabbeinu was davening, right? It wasn't like it was one of these terrible things Moshe Rabbeinu had to do. And then you have Rivchem, which is that the people wanted to know the halacha. This person said it was like this, this person said it was like that. Moshe Rabbeinu had to mediate between the two. So it's not like when Moshe Rabbeinu says, Echa Salavadi, he's basically saying, it was so terrible for me. It was difficult, but it wasn't terrible. He was teaching Torah. He was davening. And he was teaching, you know, distinguishing the laws for people. I mean, it was difficult, but it wasn't a terrible thing. I mean, that's what every rabbi's job is, to teach Torah, to daven for people, and for adjudicating situations. That's what all rabbis do. It's not a terrible thing. So, in many ways, Moshe Rabbeinu was just bemoaning the fact that he had to do the job, right? And the job was very labor-intensive, because he was the only person doing it. Echa Asal Vadi is not saying, these people are terrible, and this job is terrible. What it's saying is, this job is difficult for one person to do. Echa Asal Vadi. And as we said before, there's another time that the word Echa is brought up, and we use it in our Haftorah this week. Or Yeshayahu uses it in the Haftorah that we read this week. If you look at source number 3, Yeshayahu Anavi says, Vim Tma Anu Marisem Cherev Tuklu. And if you deny or disobey, it says here, refuse, and you rebel, Cherev Tuklu. A sword you will eat, or you will be eaten. By, ki pi Hashem diberek. That's what Hashem says, and then Yeshayahu says, Echa ha'isal azona. How could it be that you became a harlot, kiryah ne'mana, a city which was so faithful, like ma'aminim, like emuna, kiryah ne'mana, melea simishbat, sedek yalin ba ve'atam ratzchim, that it once was full of justice and law, and now it is full of murderers. Kaspecha elasigim, your silver has turned to dross. I don't know what dross is. I assume it means some kind of withering. It's what? Tarnish? Okay, could be tarnished. Savech mahul bamayim, your wine is cut with water. Okay, obviously analogies. Sarach sorim v'hachavrei ganavim. Kulo yasam lo aleihem. That your officers are all wayward, and the people are thieves. Chavrei could be like your colleagues. I don't know. Everyone loves taking bribes. Everyone is chasing shalmonim. What are shalmonim? It says here gifts. Yasom lo yishpotu. You're not taking care of the orphans. And the difficulties of the widows, you're not even taking in front of you. Right? Never reaches them. Lo yavo aleihem, never come to your court. Right? So he says, Echa ha'yisal azona. How could it be that Jerusalem has become a harlot? Has basically become, I guess to explain the metaphor, has basically devoted itself to other things besides Hashem. Right? That's the metaphor of the harlot, that you're no longer committed, devoted to Hashem, but you're devoted to other things. So here Yeshayahu is clearly, it's a negative Echa, right? That's a negative Echa because it's difficult to see how Yerushalayim has basically, you know, become so corrupt. And then we have, of course, the Echa of Echa. Echa yashva vadad ha'ir abasiyam ha'isa kalmana. This city, how could it have been? How could it sit alone? It was great among the nations, and now it's like an almana, it's like a widow. Rabasi Bagayim, it was a princess among the nations, a leader among the nations. Sarasiba Mindinos, it was great Rabba, like great among the nations. And Sarasiba Mindinos, it was like an officer or a prince among the other countries. Hayesalamas has now become nothingness has become a thrall, whatever that means. So these are the three instances of Eicha. How, and how. They're not always how, as you see from the translation. Sometimes they say just, alas, which is an interesting word. But if you look at the way that it first says it by Devarim, and the literal translation of when Moshe Rabbeinu says it is, Eicha Salavidi, literally, how can I do it by myself? Right, how? And here it also could be how, right? It's easily translated as how. And this is what the Midrash picks up on in source number 5. Eicha Yashvad, Eicha Yashva Vadad, Shlosha Nisnav L'Blashon Eicha. There were three people that prophesized with the word Eicha. Moshe, Yeshayahu, and Yirmiyahu. Moshe Amar Eicha Salavadi, Yeshayahu Amar Eicha Haisalazona, Yirmiyahu Amar Eicha Yashva Vadad. So those are the three that we just went over. Amar Rabbi Levi, Mashal Matrona Shahila Shlosha Shushbinin. It is compared to some kind of leader, what's a shashbona, a noble woman, who had three friends. Echad ra osa b'shalvasa, echad ra osa b'pachazusa, v'echad ra osa b'nivula. One of them saw her, one of the friends saw the noble woman in her tranquil state. One of them saw her in her recklessness. And one of them saw her in her degenerateness. Kach Moshe Ras Yisrael Bechvoda Meshalvasam. Moshe Rabbeinu, when did he say the word Eicha? He said it when they were being honorable and when they were being tranquil. And he said, Eicha Salavati Yeshayahu Ra'osa Bechap Pepachzusa, that he saw them in their recklessness. Yamar Eicha Yisrael Uzona, you're doing these terrible things. Yirmiyah Ra'osa Benivulam. And Yirmiyah saw the end product where it was basically desolate and degenerate. Eicha Yashvavadad, how could such a city sit like this? So three Eichas, three different stages. We have tranquility, we have recklessness, poor acting, and then we have the desolate product. And the question becomes that one of these is not like the others, right? When it comes to Yeshayahu, it's clear it's because the Jewish people are doing terrible things. When it comes to Yirmiyahu, it's clear that they have done terrible things and this is their punishment. But when it comes to Moshe Rabbeinu, even according to the words of the Midrash, what does it say? Eicha at a time of tranquility. It even says, Bechvodam, in their glory. This is a glorious time for the Jewish people. And yet, we still say these words in the tune of Eicha. Now, you could come along and say, well, it's just saying the word Eicha, Eicha, so we're trying to sort of, it's a cute connection, we're trying to introduce, you know, Tisha B'Av, which is about to come up, but we usually don't do stuff like that, right? We don't do cute things. When I was younger, and you know, you would go on these Shabbatones for summer camp or whatever, and the kids would always be the ones that lane because you know staff don't like laning, and so me and my friends, or really only my friends, I was in on it, but he would always throw in what's called a shalshelis. You know what a shalshelis is?
Yeah.
It only happens four times in the Torah, right? The chain, and he thought it was funny that he would randomly do it at random times. And it was camp, and it probably wasn't appropriate, but we were kids, he thought it was funny. So we don't just, but it was inappropriate, that's my point. That was an inappropriate thing to do. So we don't just randomly put tunes in because it's cute, or because it's, you know, intriguing. The reason that we put Eicha Salavati in the tune of Eicha presumably is because the message of Eicha Salavati has something to do with the Eicha of the other two, the Eicha of Yirmiyahu or the Eicha of Yeshayahu. So what exactly is the message between Moshe's Eicha and the other two Eichas? Even within the Midrash, it seems like they're very disjointed. The Eicha of Moshe Rabbeinu is a positive Eicha, whereas the Eicha of Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu are negative. So what does it mean that Moshe Rabbeinu's Eicha is associated with the Tisha B'Av Eicha? Why do we read it in that tune? Bless you. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says a very simple thing. It doesn't really answer a question. Rashi tells us, "Im Omar Eicha Salavadi." Moshe Rabbeinu says, "How could I possibly carry this burden?" Rashi says, "Im Omar Lekabal Sachar Lo'ucha." Even if you would pay me, I couldn't do it. Right? You would think, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu comes along, "I'm doing this pro bono." And it's so difficult. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, no, even if I would be paid for it, it would still be difficult. That's what he's saying. You know, Echa Salavadi, how could I possibly do this? Doesn't matter what you would give me, I wouldn't be able to do it. That's what Rashi says. Im Omar Lakabo Sachar Lulucha, even if I would do it for money. Zohi Shemarti Lachem Lo Me'atzmi Ani Omer Lachem Elam Pia Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is what I've said to you. Not of myself do I tell you that I am not able to bear you, but I do the bidding of Hashem, that I am basically saying that I can't do it myself. I need other people. The only reason I was doing it myself was because of Hashem telling me to. But Rashi doesn't really help us, right? That's just saying a practical notion that Moshe Rabbeinu can't carry it by himself. So now we're going to go a little off the sheet, because I have a couple ideas that maybe I can share that will enlighten this issue. So first of all, I want to quote from you, quote for you, a statement from Rav Moshe Feinstein. And I'll be honest with you, the statement of Rav Moshe Feinstein is not very clear to me. I've looked at it, I've looked at people's translations of it. It seems to me like it could be understood in different ways. But one way you can understand Rav Moshe Feinstein's understanding, Rav Moshe Feinstein's explanation of this phrase, is Echa Salavadi, how could it be that I am able to grow to these heights, and yet there's still Tarchachem Maaseachem V'riyachem. That I, in this culture, in this midbar, when we're directly talking to Hashem, I'm able to be this high, and yet no one around me is able to grow. Everyone around me is still giving me tirchas and masas and rivchas, right? They're all you know, having difficulty growing. And yet, Echa Asah Levadi, how could I have grown Asah Levadi by myself? And no one else is growing with me. It's a very interesting take on the words. It's a pretty Hasidish vart on how to understand the words Echa Asah Levadi. It's not entirely clear that's what it means, but Rav Moshe says the same thing is true when it comes to Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu. They also say Echa. How could it be? Why? Because Yeshayahu was a prophet. He had the ability to rise to the heights that he did. And yet everybody around him is sinning, right? When he says, Haisa Lazona, why is everybody like this? Why is it that everybody around here is being so reckless while I'm able to pull it together? Right? If I'm able to do it, that means other people are, and yet no one is. Similarly, Yirmiyahu is saying the same thing. Echa Yashvavadet, how could Yerushalayim be sitting desolate? No one else is trying to follow the word of Hashem. So this is how Rav Moshe explains the connection between the three situations. That while it's true, Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu were negative situations, Moshe Rabbeinu in some ways was also talking about a negative situation. Even though the psukim in general are talking about, you know, the Jewish people's journey in the Midbar and some of the positive things that happens, this specific instance is actually a ridicule of the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, Echa Asal Vadi, how could I be the only one that has grown in this atmosphere? Other people should also be able to grow. It's an interesting take. I'd like to take that take and use it in my own way. Or I guess I shouldn't say use it. I say, This is not Rav Moshe's interpretation. This is my own interpretation. You can take it or leave it. Moshe Rabbeinu here is talking about the Jewish people, and specifically talking about the difficulty it is he's having to lead them as a leader by himself. Right? He's saying, Tarchachem Asachem Rivchem. It's difficult for me to teach all this Torah. It's difficult for me to daven all these things for you. It's difficult for me to adjudicate all the law. And he says to himself, why aren't other people also helping? Why aren't other people getting smicha and starting to teach? Why aren't other people learning how to daven and speaking out to Hashem? Why aren't other people learning the laws that I've already taught them and then going by themselves to help teach the laws to people that are fighting? Why is it that I'm the only one helping other people around here? Right? Echa Asal Avadi, how could it be that I'm the only one carrying this burden? I'm the only one that wants to help the Jewish people and teach them Torah. Where are all the other rabbis? How could it be? And this is obviously earlier in the Midbar. Later in the Midbar, when we get all the judges, we get all the leaders, so that's a different story. But he's talking about back then in Parshas Yisro, he says that phrase, everybody just saw that Hashem was taking them out of Egypt. Everyone saw the miracles. Everyone saw the Makos and the Yamsuf and everything that came with it. Everyone, at this point, unclear if Matan Torah had happened yet. But either way, they had seen everything Hashem did. And yet Moshe Rabbeinu is still the only one who's giving over the word of Hashem. Why isn't anyone else joining in to teach the word of Hashem, to help other people? Aaron, okay, so Aaron could, yeah, maybe Aaron is part of the situation. So Pinchas hasn't come around yet. At least we haven't seen anything from Pinchas yet. We haven't seen anything from Yehoshua yet. We remember this is the beginning of the Midbar. They haven't even gotten the Torah yet.
So Aaron's still alive.
Yeah, everyone's alive. This is a recollection of what happened at the beginning of the desert. They just got out of Israel. They just got out of Mitzrayim, sorry. And they're on their way to get the Torah. And this is when Moshe Rabbeinu has the scene with Yisra. And when he recalls that scene early on, before Yoshua, before Kalev, before Pinchas, now he's saying, Eicha Salavadi, how could I be the only one carrying this burden? Yeah.
Well, they were plain people. They were slaves not too long before.
Good.
And here's Moshe who talks to God.
Right. Yeah. No, for sure. There's something to that. There's definitely something to the fact that Moshe was the chosen one. But as you could also say, there are other people that were in leadership positions but not doing the bidding of Moshe, right? Nachshon ben Aminadav, when he goes into the Amsuf, so he goes in, he has this amazing devotion to go in, but we don't hear about Nachshon teaching anybody, right? We don't hear about him volunteering to be a leader of the Jewish people. He led in that situation. So maybe it's not as exacting as I'm making it out to be, but Moshe is basically saying, why am I the only one that's doing all these things, right? Eicha Salavadi, how could I be carrying this burden by myself? And in line with the reason I say it's an extension of Rav Moshe is because that's what Rav Moshe is basically saying, but on a more individual level. Why am I the only one growing in this atmosphere, right? I'm extending that to say that Moshe is also saying, why am I the only one teaching? Connecting it to the Ramban, who is explaining this pasuk to be about teaching. So that's Moshe Rabbeinu's question. And the truth is that part of the reason that I thought of this is because of an interpretation of another part of the Torah, which has to do with Moshe Rabbeinu, and another instance of his, unique position of doing something. And if you look at source number 7, I'll hope to give it over to you. We all know this story, but maybe we don't know this interpretation. Here, Dina. The pasuk says in Shmos Beis Yud, the second chapter of Shmos, Vayigdal Hayelad. This is obviously talking about Moshe. Vatvielu Basparo, and he was brought to Basparo. Vayhila Leven, and he was her son. Vatikra Shmo Moshe. Vatomer Kimin Amayim Shiziu, and she named him Moshe because from the water he was drawn. Favorite line whenever you translate it. He was called Moses because from the water he was drawn. What does that have to do with anything? Yeah, you have to obviously see it in the Hebrew to understand it. If this is Hebrew, it's a very interesting discussion about where the word Moshe comes from. Either way, vayihi bayamim ahem, vayigdal Moshe, and Moshe grew up, vayetze el achav, vayar besivlosam, and he saw their, sivlosam is a very interesting word, he saw their difficulty. If I had to guess, I'll probably teach you my take on this, which is not my own take, but that the word sivlosam means tolerance, not difficulty, but for a different time. Vayar ish mitzri, and he saw an Egyptian man, makei shivri me'achav, and he saw an Egyptian man hitting another Jew. Me'achav is an interesting word because it implies that Moshe already knows he's a Jew. For a different time. Vayifen ko vacho, and he looks this way, he looks that way. Vayar ki ein ish, he sees there's no one around. Vayachas ha-mitzri vayitzmeni vacho, and he hits the Egyptian and he buries him in the sand. We know the rest of the story. They said, are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian? So this is a very interesting episode, right? For a number of reasons. Moshe Rabbeinu hits this Egyptian on the assumption that nobody else is watching. And then the next thing he knows, lo and behold, someone else is watching. So this prompts some of the commentaries to explain that it wasn't the fact that no one else was watching. It wasn't Vayifen Kovacho that he looked here, he looked there, and there was no one around. It says Vayar Ki Ein Ish, but what it means is there was no one else that was doing anything. If you look at the Netziv, the Netziv says in Source Namriya, Vayifen Kovacho, Chipes Eitzos Likbol Al Mitzri Sheiko Chinam. He's looking for someone that will tell him what's going on, because this Egyptian just hits somebody for no good reason. Vayar Ki Ein Ish, then he sees Lahagi Lefanav Esaol. There's no one around that he seems fit to talk to tell them what's going on. Kikulam atzeres bogdim misone Yisrael. Everybody was on the same page as the Egyptians. They were all hating the Jewish people. So it's not that there was no one around, but there was no one around that he could get to discipline this Egyptian. Right? He sees a bunch of people around. The only problem is they're all Egyptian officers, and they all don't like the Jewish people. So Vayar Ki Ein Ish, he's got no one to turn to. But it's not that there was no one there. There are plenty of people there. They're out in the desert working in the field. It's not like they're in a little booth, you know, sectioned off by from everyone else. Vayachas haMitzri says in the Netziv, b'makom she'ein ish sham, ish hishtadol hu liyos ish. Right? B'makom she'ein sham ish, when there's no other person there around to do anything, hishtadol hu liyos ish. He goes and tries to be the person. And this is, you know, this phrase doesn't mean when there's literally nobody there. It means when there are people there, but there was no one willing. So Moshe Rabbeinu is looking around, and he's saying to himself, am I the only person that's willing to stand up for this Jew? All of these other people around me are just sitting here watching this Jew take a beating from an Egyptian. And he says to himself, how could I be the only person? And then he goes and he hits the Egyptian and he runs away. Or he ultimately runs away. That's why the next pasuk says, are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian? Because everyone else saw it. There were other people there. So when it comes to this pasuk, it reminds me of our parsha this week. When Moshe Rabbeinu says, Eicha Esal Avadi, how could I be the only one around here that's doing anything? Right? It to me, it harkens back to that phrase from the Netziv. B'makom she'ein isham hishtadol yosish. And Moshe Rabbeinu took it upon himself to be the teacher because no one else was willing to do it. And that's perhaps what he was talking about, or that's one innovative way to understand what he was talking about. Eicha Esal Avadi, how could I do that? And if we, yeah, Judy.
Is there another interpretation that he looked around in the Nevuah to see if anyone will come from?
Yeah, that's what Rashi says over there. Okay. Yeah. Rashi says that. That he saw from this Egyptian, if there were going to be any converts or any noble people. Yeah, and he saw nothing was going to happen, so he killed him. Yeah, that's what Rashi says.
But that's assuming that no one was really around.
Right. That, not necessarily, but probably could be. According to the Peshat, I would assume so. And when it comes to this phrase, though, we have to understand, if it's true, this interpretation of mine, based on Rav Moshe, then how can we understand the Midrash? What does the Midrash say, right? So our whole question today was, how can we use the words Eicha Esal Avadi in the same way we use the words for Tisha B'Av, of Eicha Yashav Avadad? We use the same tune. How could it be the same tune? Presumably the time of Moshe Rabbeinu was a lot better. And if you look at the Midrash says that it was a time B'Chvodam V'Shalvasam. It was a time of the Jewish people's glory and a time of their tranquility. So how could that be a negative? So perhaps we can say the following. That specifically in times of prosperity and in times of glory, that's when people don't want to do any work. When it's times like the Jewish people being saved from Egypt, when it's times like them being fed every single day, them being clothed every single day, them being taken care of, what do they need a headache of taking care of other people's problems for? Right, so Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Eicha Esal Avadi, how could I be the only one taking care of things?" Tarchachem Maaseachem V'Rivchem. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, because of the tranquility, because of the ease of living that we have nowadays, why isn't anyone else helping out? And the answer is because everyone's just trying to enjoy the tranquility. Everyone's trying to enjoy the good times that Hashem is giving them. All of the care that Hashem is giving them, all of the sustenance, the food, the clothing. And they just want to sit back and relax. Remember, this might the word shalva might ring a bell for some of you when the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megurei Aviv be'eretz Kanan. What does Rashi say? Bikesh Yaakov lasheves b'shalva. Yaakov just wanted to sit and be tranquil for a little bit. He's had so many tzaras, right, between his children and between, you know, getting married with Rachel and Leah and the midwives. He just wanted a little break. Right? Be kishakel l'sheves b'shava. And then what happens? Ba'al avrogzo shel Yosef. The whole episode with Yosef comes along because he wanted to sit in tranquility. The same thing is happening here in the Midbar. The Jewish people. Yeah. Well, no, it's not. It's not. You should always be striving. You should always be growing. And maybe we can understand the same word shalva here to be a reference to that same kind of problematic tranquility. Or as I'll say now, complacency. Right? The Jewish people come and they say that we've got everything made for us. Moshe ra'a es Yisrael bechvodam v'shalvasam. Moshe is looking at the Jewish people in their glory, in their times of tranquility. And he says, Eich asal vadi, how could I be the only one trying to do anything around here? It's true you're living in comforts. It's true you have luxuries you've never had before. It's true you came out of Egypt and now you want to take a break. But recognize the opportunity you have. That it's now it's a time of tranquility. It's a time that we have the opportunity to grow. And as Rav Moshe says, how could I be the only one growing here? Everybody else is just sitting around being complacent with tranquility. And extending to my understanding, that it's also, how could it be that I'm the only one at this time of tranquility, where we have the opportunity to teach, we have the opportunity to help other people, that I'm the only one helping other people. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu said, Echa Salavati, how could I be the only one trying to help out? So while it's true, Yeshayahu, when he says Echa Hayisal Azona, he's talking about the negative actions of the Jewish people. And Yirmiyahu, when he says Echa Yashav Adar, is talking about the product of the desolation, where there are no Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu is talking about Echa Hayisal Avadi, the complacency of the Jewish people. Not something that they did bad, or not a product of negativity, but rather an inaction of negativity. The fact that they didn't want to do anything was their problem. And it was specifically during a time, bechvodam v'shalvasam, that they had this Echa. And in this way, we can understand that when it comes to this Shabbos, when we read the words Echa Selvadi, we will also read it in the Tisha B'Av Trap. Because it's not only about the times where Jewish people were doing things that were bad. It's also about the times that they weren't doing things that were good. That's also a problem. When you have the opportunity to do good and you don't do good, that's also problematic. If there's an interesting article I just saw, it was posted this week, maybe at the end of last week, I don't remember. The name of the article was "Millennials Are the Loniest Generation." You know what a millennial is? That's me. It says it's the people that were born basically in the 80s and on, or 80s to 2000. People that grew up with technology, the first generation that grows up with all these gadgets. Right? Millennials are also more likely than older generations to report that they have no acquaintances. 25% of millennials say this is the case, or no friends. 22% of millennials say they have no friends. 27% of millennials say they have no close friends. 30% say they have no best friends. That's pretty lonely. A study from the University of Pennsylvania found a link between social media use and decreased well-being. Speaking about the study she and her team conducted, psychologist Melissa G. Hunt said, "Here's the bottom line. Using less social media than you normally would leads to significant decreases in both depression and loneliness. The less we sit on our phone by ourselves, the more we feel happy, the more we feel connected to other people. Excessive social media use may be just one of the reasons some Americans are feeling isolated. About 3 in 10 Americans say they find it difficult to make friends. The most common reason, shyness. People, because they're so busy on their phones, never learn how to talk to people, and they're shy to approach other people. Another 27% of those find it difficult to make friends. They say they don't feel like they need friends." That's the operative phrase for me. Why don't they feel like they need friends? Because they have so much that they can enjoy. They have so much entertainment at their fingertips, they don't need anybody else. And for me, when I read this article, I said, wow, that's Moshe Rabbeinu in this week's Parsha. Echa asal levadi. How could I be the only one around here doing anything? Because everybody else is just enjoying the luxuries. They're sitting around with their, I don't know, cell phones or whatever entertainment Hashem has provided for them. All this wonderful opportunity, they have nothing to worry about. They're just sitting back enjoying life that Hashem's giving them. And it's specifically because of those luxuries that they're not getting up and helping other people. And this is the trap of prosperity. And it's a prosperity that leads to loneliness. Because the more that you indulge in the prosperity God gives you, the less you're willing to connect to other people. Because you just feel like, I'll just continue, you know, digesting all of this stuff Hashem's giving me. And instead, you're not considering what you can do for the better. And when we have this statement from Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not just a statement of difficulty of the job, as we started with, but it's also the difficulty of prosperity. And I, you know, obviously don't need to make the connections to you, but nowadays we're living in a time of prosperity. And we all have to remind ourselves that part of Tisha B'Av, part of the tune of Eicha, is the ability to recognize that despite our luxuries, that doesn't give us that doesn't give us license to ignore other people, doesn't give us license to not take an active role in leadership positions or active role in involvement in the shul and social structures and other types of things where we can help other people out. It's very easy to retreat, like the millennials seem to be doing, to retreat into our own corners and just enjoy the luxuries of modern day living. But we have to remember, Moshe Rabbeinu's call, Eicha Selavati, how could I be the only one out here at a time of prosperity who's helping people out? We shall remember this. We shall take this with us as we try to get better during these 9 days. Yeah, have a great week.